Hey everyone, thanks for joining. Let's give it a few more minutes and then we'll start the show. We have quorum with Paul here.
Yeah, you do have quorum, actually.
We do. Want to facilitate, Chuck, or do you want me to do it?
Go ahead.
All right. So welcome, everybody, to the March 8th Council Affairs Committee meeting of the HIV Community Planning Council. Really quickly, just quick intros. Let's go by what's on my list. Jesse?
Thanks. Jesse Murphy, council member.
Cool. Matt?
Matt Gelmaker, council member.
Chuck?
Chuck Adams, council member, co-chair of this committee.
Ken?
And Pierce, council member.
Paul?
Paul Harkin, council member.
All right, and then we have Stephen visiting us today.
Stephen Spana, the HCOP staff attorney at ALRP.
And then we have Kira.
Hi, everyone. Kira, council staff.
David Jordan, council staff.
Awesome. All right, really quickly, let's look at the agenda for today. We have the new folks joining us really quickly. Really quick, just intro. Yeah.
Sorry, did you say my name?
Yes.
Hi.
Quick hello. Mark?
Mark Moore, council staff.
Awesome, thank you. All right, so let's look at the draft agenda for today. All right, there we go. Any changes or additions or subtractions for today's agenda? No, we'll approve by consensus.
I'm not sure if Bill will be able to make it by 3:30. He did send me a text. Let me just reread it. Sorry, I'm literally just coming right from a four-hour retreat right into this meeting. Wow. Hopes to join for the second half. So I need to clarify with him what he considers the second half, because he's on for 3:30. And hopefully Thomas will join us as well. So let me check in on that. But fingers crossed that that's that the second agenda, the second major agenda item is still happening.
Don't worry. Then maybe we should slow down. I was considering everyone's like time today, and I was like, let's get this show on the road. I got patience.
Okay, I can share minutes now if everyone was there. I'm sorry, I was looking at my phone. Was that approved?
Yeah, draft agenda approved. There was consensus. Let's share the minutes, the draft minutes from last meeting.
All right, so we have here our normal stuff. And then there was a discussion around committees. Okay.
Right, if there are no changes or division subtractions, I'd like to approve that by consensus. Right, great. Next, have any announcements from committee members?
Unless there's an objection, it would be very helpful if I could hop off after following my the review of my report. I'm happy to stick around for feedback, but I'm a little crunched all day.
Is there any public comment? No public comment today's meeting. Right, so let's just jump into it, Stephen. Let's do the HCAP annual report. So we're going to review the annual report that Stephen provides every year, and I think it's just sort of like make sure we, content-wise, it's fine. I think it's just sort of the structure and what we want to sort of like tease out or edit for the final presentation.
Yeah, thank you. So I'll start just by first of all, thanking you all for some grace here. My contract period ends on the 28th of February. And so I've only had about 4 business days to distill some of this information. I have gotten to a bunch of it, but not to the whole thing. So what I've done is I've created slides that I can share. And I'll move through it. It does mimic in some ways the report from last year, so you'll understand the flow, but the data is not accurate. The data that I've shared is accurate, but there may be some bits of it that is inaccurate, and I'll point that out as I come to it. So again, my program is the HIV Consumer Advocacy Project. Let me share my screen here. Are you all able to see that?
Yes.
Excellent. My hopes for the presentation will be that the council members increase their knowledge of HCAP services. I know that the program is well known to a lot of the council members, but perhaps there's new ones that aren't so familiar, and hopefully any of the public attending will learn something. I'll provide you with the annual report the council with the annual report on my year of work. I would like to discuss some of the challenges that consumers faced this year and in the upcoming year, and also discuss some of the successes of the program this last year. So by way of review, the HIV Consumer Advocacy Project exists to provide service to consumers of Ryan White Care funded programs located in the San Francisco EMA, which is San Francisco, Marin, and San Mateo counties, as well as agencies funded by the San Francisco HHS or Department of Public Health HIV Health Services Department. HCAP is unique. The Planning Council here is one of the only EMAs that's authorized such a position, although I think others could benefit. To qualify for HCAP services, you must be a person living with a consumer, would be a person living with HIV or AIDS, accessing or trying to access Ryan White Care funds or DPH HIV Health Services funded programs. And residing in San Francisco, San Mateo, or Marin counties in the EMA. In addition, service providers also qualify for a limited amount of technical assistance, which I'll talk about. These are the services that we can provide to consumers: advocacy, mediation, referrals, the advocacy can show up in a lot of different forms. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Service providers can receive technical assistance. They can receive direct referrals from me, and I can also receive direct referrals from them. And I can also assist them in removing other issues and barriers that affect consumers' quality of life. There have been a number of consumers that I've coordinated care for with other service providers. And this is more or less how I move through a consumer issue. Oftentimes I'm talking about an access issue. So an access issue would be something where a client is trying to access a service but cannot for some reason. So maybe their disability prevents them from showing up physically to a meeting, or perhaps they need to have a reasonable accommodation letter drafted to, or perhaps the policy needs to be reimagined, in which case I can advocate for that. Oftentimes a material might be helpful. This again is something that we experienced a lot during COVID, where clients were trying to access either mental health services or primary care services, but didn't have access to a computer. So working with the service providers to get them access was a big part of the job. It might be an eligibility issue. For example, a consumer might not be eligible, but with some support might become eligible for services, or they might not be informed as to their actual eligibility. And that has happened before, where a service provider or somebody new to the organization didn't know what the eligibility requirements were and just needed to be communicated. It's also happened on the other side, where a consumer thought they were ineligible and therefore didn't attempt to access the services. But once I told them that they were eligible, we were able to connect them. Other times there's a conflict, and in that instance, I have a couple of tools that I can access. My goal is always to try and find the least adversarial method of resolution. Oftentimes it can be phone calls on both sides to kind of chat with folks about, what is needed to make sure that the client gets connected or stays connected. That is a very successful method. Oftentimes we have to file a grievance, which also this year turns out was very successful in supporting clients. Alternatively, sometimes it might not be a good fit for the client and the service provider, and we have to access alternative services. Unfortunately, we are lucky here in San Francisco to have a pretty robust system of care where there are other service providers, oftentimes in service categories. Oftentimes the consumer just needs some more information, and I'm always happy to provide that. My relationship with the service providers helps me expedite their connection to services sometimes, or cut through some of the questions that the consumer might otherwise have. And oftentimes they can reach me more directly, either because we're already connected or more quickly because of whatever, procedures we have. Other times there may, this is where being an attorney becomes helpful. The client's issue can't really be supported through HCAP or informal methods of negotiation, in which case, identifying that as a legal issue helps me connect them quickly to legal services. That happens oftentimes in the housing realm. It's notable that a lot of clients show up to HCAP with more than one issue. For example, a housing issue at an RCFCI could require support with primary medical, case management, and mental health in order to get resolved. I do actually foresee that being a big part of 2022 for us and the community. I'll try my best to provide you with some info based on data from this year. So we did, HCAP saw 106 unduplicated clients with a total of 130 HCAP matters during the 21-22 contract year, which is a 10% increase in service provision, which is a 17% increase from 2019-20. I had two cases in San Mateo and two cases in Marin County, which are both up from the last year. In the prior year, I didn't have any cases in other counties. What I would like to do for this year, because just based on other conversations that I've seen in other committees and at a previous planning council, what I would like to do is break down the age data a little bit more than I previously had. Typically, I've recorded on 50 and over, but I think that it's been kind of identified that there are different needs for folks within different age categories there. And so I want to provide as much data as I can for the council. Once I am able to do that, I'll add this to that slide. Gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, and income are also going to be a part of that discussion. These are accurate numbers. I left blank the stuff that I have not yet analyzed. Let's see. This is, if anyone remembers from previous years, I break down the services into the top four, you know, the top four service categories, and then the issues affecting those. I do have some graphs and I have some data on that. I'm still distilling it, but I can report that the top four categories of issues, or the top four categories in which issues, HCAP issues presented, were number one in housing services, dental services as number second, and then psychosocial support and primary medical tied for the fourth place need. Again, these are kind of breakout bits of that information. I will provide that data as soon as I analyze it. And, you know, I don't have the exact numbers because of, you know, going back just for a second, I don't have the exact numbers, so it's kind of hard to distill exactly what it all means. This is a slide from last year, so it's not accurate. I have been able to write out some of the unique challenges that we've seen and some of the success stories, and I'm happy to present on that right now. One challenge that HCAP has experienced, as well as I know other service providers have, is outreach during COVID. Not only providing outreach to consumers, but also getting feedback from consumers on those outreaches. I know this is a challenge that's been identified in the community engagement committee for their COLAs, et cetera. And so it is something that's echoed here at AORP. We did continue to provide those services throughout shelter in place, as well as our direct services. We provided emergency wills and POAs through AORP, and HCAP supported in person where necessary. Isolation, this isn't a big issue that COVID-19 has presented. And I have reported on this in the Community Engagement Committee to some extent, but one thing that has shown up often in the office where there is very little support is pet support. And, you know, I mean, it's no mystery that, you know, a lot of folks who are experiencing isolation sought support and companionship from an animal. I understand that support is not available, it's not eligible for Ryan Light Care funding, but it is certainly a need that the DPH could identify. I can only see the need for that increasing as the population of people living with HIV and AIDS ages. Housing continues to be an issue. This is true, although this slide is from last year. I can say that, you know, HCAP's connection to service providers can help to inform and resolve a lot of the issues and avoid litigation. At the same time, the number of grievances filed was pretty high this year, and most of them were in the housing services category. And the filing of those grievances did result in positive outcomes for multiple clients. This is kind of the world that, you know, that I'm living in when it comes to the housing services. The Planning Council and I believe the committee, the individual committees, have all kind of seen the report by Manuel Vasquez from the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development. A lot of the changes stemming from the housing plan that they provided affected a lot of consumers and resulted in some successes and some challenges. For example, following our advocacy, some former residents were able to move toward independent living. They were provided long-term deep subsidies by the mayor's office, and, you know, were able to move. They had adequate support to move, and they were provided, you know, moving costs and some help doing all the paperwork and locating units, which we know are in, you know, short supply. Some individuals were repositioned to the new category of facility, TRCF, the transitional residential care facility. However, those will have a 2-year time limit on their tenancies. Those who remained at the RCFCI level of care not only have a 1-year, only 1 year to stabilize or relocate, they also received a rent increase of 100%. Rather than it being a third of their income going toward rent, it wound up being 2/3 of their rent going toward toward income. Presumably that is because of the high cost of care at the RCFCI. At the same time, the amount, I don't know the impact that an extra couple of $100 a month has on those costs. The challenges that we're going to experience, I think, in the RCFCI world moving into 2022 are pretty similar to the ones that we have. And some of the lessons of 2021 can kind of help us improve how we do this moving forward. HCAP is already working on several cases here, in kind of the same service category. And a big challenge that we have is, you know, where do we relocate folks to and how does it get paid for? We have maintained that we have to advocate for long-term deep subsidies in permanent housing with adequate supportive services at an appropriate level of care. And that appears to be the goal across the board. It is not a service provider issue. It is not a MOCD issue. It is not an HCAP issue. It's not a DPH issue solely, but it is a challenge for the community that we have to figure out how to overcome. I think two of the main goals must be to maintain appropriate safeguards between housing service providers and building management in the context of supportive housing. And we have to seek to reduce transition trauma. A lot of the folks that are being repositioned have experienced houselessness. And I've seen a lot of clients really decompensate as a result of some of these changes. Mental health and substance use disorders continue to affect HCAP clients in a disproportionate way. Behavioral issues can create barriers to services, and certainly everyone needs to feel safe when they're working with our consumers, but there really is nowhere to go. I maintain that we should all be providers of last resort because we're charged with hanging in there, but there is a level of need that becomes, you know, untenable and unsustainable for certain service providers. So I think this next slide is an important one, although it's not, the need for these services is not necessarily indicated by the number of issues in the service category in this instance, but it is indicated by the number of repeated issues in connection with particular HCAP clients. So we're talking about these clients, who are the most vulnerable members of the community, where they've sought support in a variety of service providers and have somehow that relationship has deteriorated in every instance. I've often said this with to service providers who have supported HCAP clients and resolving their conflicts. There's a difference between supporting a consumer and the consumer feeling supported. And so even though consumers are service providers are often providing what it is that they are charged with providing, it doesn't necessarily land with the consumer in all instances. And so sometimes it just takes a little bit extra support to make sure that the client feels like they're being cared for. To me, when I see consumers who have exhausted their relationships with, you know, all of the service providers or many service providers time and time again, it indicates a need for well-supported professionals trained in a trauma-informed care who can nimbly maneuver through the network of care providers and advocate on behalf of the consumers appropriately. That sounds like intensive case management to me, but it's a very high level of need, and there's not a lot of identifiable service providers that can provide that level of support. Consumer challenges, obviously, you know, we do know that the population of people living with HIV and AIDS is continues to age. There are ongoing struggles with isolation. And I've heard, you know, in attending some of the additional trainings that I've heard and trying to listen to the community as best I can, I've heard a disconnection from the younger community members and service providers. I think this can be addressed with cultural sensitivity and trauma-informed care. It appears also to be a goal of GTZ, you know, with their effort to get to zero stigma. And then additional health issues, which are either unrelated or related to HIVs, you know, add to aging consumers' challenges who are already struggling with managing their own care and daily living. We've had some successes. I would like to report on promising service trends. I will do that as soon as I can. I will also report on challenging service trends if that becomes a necessity. Success stories. A grievance filed on behalf of the consumer resulted in changes to service providers' training policies and procedures. I intend to talk about this because I think it presents a really you know, great success of the program, where filing a grievance resulted in a really strong response by a service provider who then not only like instituted training, but also updated on stuff that they were already working on to improve what they knew was a challenge, and really appreciated the consumer's voice in that process. And it kind of helped them identify some of the areas where they needed to improve. So they began using, you know, Crisis Prevention Institute and trauma-informed care training for all of their frontline providers. They started a care support team, which is specifically deployed to help patients and behavioral disturbances using a trauma-informed care lens. They began drafting clear and equitable policies for patient visitors, and they instituted a structured process that removes the violent patient alerts that are placed on patients' medical records when they've had disturbances, like either through or for delirium or a myriad of reasons, and they review those alerts regularly now as a result of some of the experiences that you know, an HCAP client share. It was a long haul with that consumer, but we achieved, I think, a very strong result, and it was a really strong response by the service providers. We also had a recent success, actually, where a sustained consumer advocate relationship led to the relocation of a client to a new apartment, which is like a rare success. But this is a consumer who often comes to my office as a result of our relationship. And, you know, we were able to, over the last several years, effectively advocate for a HOPLA subsidy and relocate the client as of today. And I think this highlights how important that relationship is, because if the client hadn't been coming back here as often as they had, then I would not be able to, you know, report on this. I can also say that, you know, it highlights some of the challenges that, you know, the system of care has. You know, for example, we were unable to practically connect the client to emergency financial services. We got approved for financial service because it was very clearly a need and a health related need to move the client, but there was no practical way to get a mover paid using the emergency financial services because of the way that payments have to happen. We were also unable to connect the client effectively to IACM services, although they are very clearly a person who could benefit from those services, as I talked about earlier. That would conclude the report. I know that there's a lot of gaps, but I would love some feedback if there is any. How do I stop them?
All right. So any feedback, any questions, anything that we'd like to sort of pack a little more or prep even for the final presentation? Yes, David.
So I noticed with interest, speaking of outreach, that you had a couple of client contacts from residents in partner counties. And I'm curious as to sort of what your thoughts around why that was. Without, of course, giving anything away around confidentiality, my gut reaction would be because clients and providers have gotten more used to doing things remotely, was this partially because of that, or was there some other sort of cause around that? I'm just curious because I'm always thinking about that kind of thing.
So let me make sure I understand the question. Are you asking if I think there is a correlation? Are you asking if I have any kind of insight into how I had 4 clients outside of the county this year as opposed to last year, despite there being a lack of outreach?
Yeah, I mean, if you're having less outreach, although you did have, sounds like, increased numbers overall, but a sort of unusual increase in partner county clients.
Cool. So I can certainly answer the question, and I'm happy to add that to the report if you think it's worth reporting on. I think, fortunately, you know, I've been in the position for a minute, and folks know me. Also, as service providers have become more comfortable working remotely, they have learned how to connect. I think in 2020, everybody was treading water, basically, just to keep their head above water. And so reaching out to additional support might not have been the easiest thing. But as we all became a little bit more comfortable doing, just doing business via email or remotely, I think folks were able to connect. To be honest, the numbers right now are about on par with what they were prior to pandemic. So it's not that the numbers have improved necessarily. They just kind of got back to normal. I've always had like two clients in those in San Mateo and Marin. You know, the numbers, their epidemiology wouldn't necessarily suggest that they have a whole lot of stuff either. That being said, I do have a number of outreaches scheduled for the service providers in those counties. Well, at least in one of those counties, and I'm working towards scheduling outreach as well. I don't know, right? All I can assume is that previous outreach efforts are, you know, planting those seeds as kind of germinates over time without any real indication of why or when, or, you know, the need could come up. Also, at least one of those instances, I can say, you know, I was working with a client who was already connected, and then an issue came up where I was like, oh, maybe I can reach out to this clinic, right? And I reached out to the clinic and was able to get the client connected, right? Because it was fresh on my mind and I already had a developed relationship with the service provider. So those things happen too. Some of it is timing and not necessarily predictable or reproducible exactly.
Sure. Great. Thank you. I mean, I understand. So sometimes more art than science as far as that goes. And it's about the individual circumstance. I wasn't sure. Hearing the piece about it going back to something looking more like a normal sort of level as opposed to the dip that you saw before, that makes sense. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, and just one other point though, I do want to clarify, and I can clarify this on slides too for the final presentation, is that, you know, although outreaches for consumer targeted outreaches continue to be a challenge through COVID, I was able to complete the contractual requirement for service provider outreaches, which is, it's typically easier to connect with other service providers and attend a staff meeting to do a presentation than it is to reach out to consumers, or, you know, and especially HCAP, we don't have any incentives for consumers to show up and listen to me.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me, maybe we should...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say maybe we should coordinate because we haven't done a county partner, our partner county COLA or outreach in a couple of years. So maybe we can help drum up some folks with a little incentives or at least buy them lunch. So we'll talk about that in community engagement next month, maybe.
Let's.
Dave, next I have Na.
Hi, Na with Marin County. Thank you for the presentation. I learned a lot because I don't think I heard this presentation before. I'm a new member on the council. I wanted to ask if you offer the services in another language, were all the clients English speaking? If not, then maybe it would be helpful to see how many clients you served that weren't English speaking and maybe your demographic slide. And then go ahead.
I didn't realize you were, yeah, I can certainly add that.
Great, and then my other question is, I knew that you offered the services to consumers, but then I didn't know that you work with the service providers too. So I think it's something I wanna connect with you about, maybe coming to one of our service provider meetings and sharing a presentation. We've had a lot of talk about grievances regarding our oral health providers. So I think maybe it would be really helpful for you to connect with our oral health provider and share. Yeah, your services.
I would be happy to do that. I'm happy to follow up with you, Nat, and I'll make sure to get your contact information off of the email that was sent out. I will also, I can tell you right off the bat, it's not an exciting slide. It is 99.9% English speaking clients that I have. However, I do have one Spanish speaking client who's monolingual Spanish. We effectively communicate. I muddle through our conversations when absolutely necessary, but she is also well connected to another service provider who supports, through case management. And that is, again, another reason why, well-supported intensive case management is helpful, because they can help connect folks to all the other services that are available to them. Without somebody that speaks their language, that looks like them, that represents them in the ways that they want to be, represented, it's difficult to help, help people connect. So I'm happy to add that slide if you think it would help, but I can also just report on that part of it, which I think is the more nitty gritty of it.
So if we have a Spanish-speaking client that wants to work with you, they would have to bring their case manager or someone else to help translate?
So I speak some functional Spanish. I'm reticent to actually say that out loud. But I speak enough, Spanish to be able to say what I need. It's harder for me to understand everything, and I would prefer to have a translator. We do have access to translation services here, and that's something I'm willing to employ. It's not something that I've needed to employ yet. Our housing department at ALRP does have a translation part, because we offer services in all the languages. I have outreach flyers and stuff in every language. So if people need to learn more about the program, I can provide those in multiple languages, and I can send those your way if you'd like. But without the use of an outside service, it would be very difficult for me to provide services in another language. I can communicate with service providers, and I can do a lot of my job after an initial intake, and then just kind of update the client. But with a more intensive case where there's a lot of dialogue back and forth necessary, it does become more challenging.
Good to know. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Any other impact? Yes, Jesse.
Real quick, no, it's just a quick thank you. I really appreciate this presentation. I love the vignettes and the stories that you share, and I just the care and dignity that you and the respect that you provide clients is so clear, and it just comes through. So just thank you for that too.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, and then how much time is allotted for this? Dave, presentation is the 40 minutes, the full 40?
I don't have the agenda in front of me. Go ahead.
You mean for today or the final?
The final full council meeting.
That I don't know.
Yeah. The only reason why I'm asking is because I think there's going to be a lot of conversation when you talk about the RFCI stuff and just the housing, and I can see there being a lot of a lot of emotion behind some of the information sort of presented, and I want to make sure we allot enough time for there to be questions and answers, but as well as like your presentation is very meaty, which is great. I just want to respect like all the work you're putting into it. So I don't think I have like a structural sort of like input. I think with the way you've restructured the presentation, it's really great to see sort of like the more when you flesh it out in terms of what cases and what the trends look like. And I think if you stick with some of that, it'd be great, just so we can understand sort of like sort of like now on this end of the pandemic, what things are looking like, specifically with the service network available. I think it'd be great. So don't kill yourself with like finite data is what I'm trying to say. I think just giving us sort of a snapshot of who is coming in and then really, really, really focusing on the work the intense sort of values and the work you've done with the individual sort of consumer.
I appreciate that. I want to be able to report on the trends accurately and make sure that, you know, the council has the information that they need to, you know, also my predecessor loved data. They loved data. So there are a lot of tools that I have to find it. And if it's helpful for the council, I want to be able to provide it.
Any other questions or input for? All right, great. Thank you so much, Stephen. Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Thank you all, I appreciate you.
Awesome. All right, so next in the agenda is end the epidemics update. Do we have any info, Dave?
So Mark had to leave before he left. He said that Bill was attempting to make it here by 3:30, but it sounded a little iffy. Mark's recommendation was that if we made it to 3:40 and we didn't see Thomas or Bill, we call it because it seems unlikely they're going to attend. And those are both two people who we have extensive amount of contact with, who are both council members, who we can, it's not like an outside provider who we have less sort of ability to provide feedback or guidance to. So,
yeah, we can always just add something to the steering committee then. Yeah, I don't want to take up too much more time. I mean, that was extensive enough. If there's any other comments or questions or input, I'd like to end the meeting now. Thank you so much, everyone, for showing up. Here's the best. Thanks.
Bye.
For the rest of your Tuesday. Thank you. Bye.